Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday morning MV Pro call. Today is November 15th, today is November 14th. Wow, look at me. Here I had thought it was the 15th, and I'm a day off. But November 14th, let me start right over again. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Thursday morning MV Pro call. Today is November 14th, and I'd like to welcome those of you that are here live as well as those of you listening to this via recording, which, of course, you can do by subscribing to MotoVitality on whatever podcast application you listen to or by visiting MotoVitality.com where you can listen to years and years and years worth of archives. All the deer here in Michigan are going, we have one more day, man. Don't do it to us. We got one more day. It becomes a kind of a national holiday here in Michigan because it's opening day of gun season. Basically shuts down. It's when I was in sales way back when, it really did have an impact. Everybody would, for the whole, that middle, like 1 week in Michigan, that one week when it would be the 15th, GM would have their quote unquote all the automotive companies would do their inventory during those weeks. They'd shut down, and it was sort of like a state holiday. I don't know if anybody else is impacted that way with hunting season, but it was a factor. It was hard to get appointments during or get people to spend time with you the week of hunting season. Anybody else, I'm going to start the call off the way I do pretty much every week, which is by asking, is there anything anybody learned this last week that you wish you had known before? Anything that happened that is worthy of sharing with other professionals across the country, or anything we can help you with?
Anything? I'm beating the dead horse still here on tannin units.
Oh, yeah.
Tannins are hard.
They are, because there's so many different types, and they're impacted by so many other factors in the water. But to which specifically are you referring to, Paul?
Tannin system after a softening system, regeneration process, getting shots of yellow water after it goes through the regeneration process. I know a lot about them, and I know what we have to do about it. But I will let everybody know, ChatGPT is pretty smart in regards to that as well. I threw a statement out to it yesterday. I'm in the water treatment business. Customer has tannins. We're getting this shot of yellow after a regeneration process. And it gives you some really good points that you can share with your service department in regards to what you should be looking for.
So really?
What I'm saying is that your service team out there should maybe have this application on their phones when they're running into a difficulty and pose a question to it. And, it talks about regeneration cycle times, check salt quality, inspect the resin, check cross-contamination, increase regeneration frequency. These are things that I do know, but maybe something that maybe one of my technicians may not know.
Hmm.
And then
it
gives them a little bit of a basis to educate themselves instead of us always enabling.
It is helpful for them, and as with ChatGPT, and we've talked about that over the last couple of years, because it is really incredible. It is helpful to – it's a great starting point, right? So that topic for conversation, but, we cannot use it – sometimes it will pop out something like it may say, salt more often and make sure that the water temperature is 98 degrees. Huh?
Right. You really need to know what you're inputting and you're looking almost for, some validation. And maybe there's going to be something else that comes up that, I didn't think about that.
Yeah. Or it creates a checklist. Yeah.
Situation. Yeah. It creates that checklist for you.
Yeah. That's actually a really great idea. I wonder, is anybody else? I know, Paul, you are a fan of the ChatGPT. You spoke about that at convention recently, and I saw that. And I use it frequently for different things as well. But is there anybody else? I love the idea of using it for troubleshooting equipment like that, to put it in there. I wonder how well it would work if you said something like, I have a brand A, 1-inch brand A, 32,000 cubic feet of media, and here are my water analysis. What should I recommend? I wonder what it would do. Have you tried it to that level to put in different water
As
problems?
I listen
and
right now to that, I will pose it right now to it, and I'll let you know what the outcome is later in the call.
Yeah, interesting. You know what I mean? Just make up a water parameter and see what it says. What
sure.
What does it recommend?
Sure.
You know, that would be kind of interesting. So, thank you. Anybody else? So those of you that have been on this call for a while know that, I've talked a lot about, at least once a year we have a call, a topic about the importance of communication between your installers and your salespeople. You know, here at the Installer Training Facility, that's something we really focus a lot on is making sure that the installers and the salespeople are in communication. And I always say it's, you know, I have on my body, I have arms and I have legs. And my arms do completely different things than my legs do. And I could function fine without legs. If I did not have legs, I could still live. I could still be accomplished. I could still do a lot of things because I have my arms. Alternatively, if I didn't have any arms and I only had legs, I could still do a lot of things with my legs. There would be some things I couldn't do without my arms. But my body works better when I have both legs and arms working in conjunction with each other. And that is the way I have always seen the sales department and the service department in terms of their communication and the necessity to get along. They serve different functions, but they are part of the same body, and it does not do any good to separate them or keep them separated, in my opinion. I believe that things just work better when they're talking to each other. I know when I first came in this industry, being from Southern Indiana, in areas where we barely had indoor plumbing, much less any type of water treatment, I didn't know plumbing size or types or drains, or I didn't know anything about these things on the technical side of it. When I got my WQA certification, I understand the chemistry behind them. I understood how they worked and what they were doing, but in terms of proper drain connections and different, you know, hydrodynamics and the plumbing systems and all the things that an installer needs to know, or should know or often does know when they're in the home, those things I was clueless about. And had I not been able to learn those things from the installers, there is a reason why I think installers get furious at salespeople, because salespeople don't know what to put on the plumbing assessments a lot of times. I mean, these are guys that didn't come from that technical background. They don't, you know, often they mistake PEX for PVC. And for those of us that do that a lot, we're like, yeah, it's plastic. Isn't that PEX? No. And what's the difference between PVC and CPVC? And, you know, for many of us, that's common sense. It's really simple. For somebody that doesn't do plumbing, that maybe has done sales or, you know, understands that type of thing, it's more difficult for them to understand. You know, alternatively, the installer often doesn't know what it's like to have that, you know, one of the examples I often give is a true story. It actually happened to me. So I think this highlights one of the challenges that salespeople run into, particularly when they're straight commission or mostly commission. You know, I recall people ask me when I hire new salespeople for a company, they'll say, what's the hardest part of the job? What's the most difficult part of the job? I can tell you the time that I was most ready to quit and do something else was one evening. It was late. It was dark. It was rainy, that rainy, sleety stuff. You know, it gets dark in Michigan at about 6 o'clock, 5:30, 6 o'clock in the wintertime. You get that rainy, sleety stuff. I had a 7:30 appointment that night. My daughter came up to me, you know, as I was home, had dinner. I mean, that's one of the nice things. I was able to run home and grab dinner my daughter came up to me, Daddy, will you tuck me in tonight? Will you read to me tonight? And I couldn't. I had an appointment at 7:30. I had to tell my daughter, no, I can't tuck you in tonight. I can't read to you tonight. And I had to get in my car and I had to drive to this appointment where it ended up being a little old lady who just wanted to tell me how she came up with all the names for her cats. Okay, so you know, that installer was home. He was done. Now, granted, he had to get up and be at the office at, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning, load the van up and go lay on his back in mud, wrapping heat tape around a mobile home pipe, you know, mobile home piping that next day. So, I mean, they're two different worlds, right? They're completely, both have extremely difficult jobs. And so it's only natural that because they're so interconnected, they're so intertwined and they rely so heavily on each other. You know, the sales guy wrote down the wrong type of plumbing and it put the installer behind on everything. And now he's going to be late for his kid's baseball game that night because he's got to do these extra installs. And so he's mad at the salesperson who here again did not write the right stuff down on the paperwork. And so he's in a hurry. He doesn't put his booties on or take his shoes off, and he tracks mud through the white carpet of this install. And now that customer is calling the salesperson and saying, take this stuff out. I don't want it anymore. Your installer did it. I mean, they're so intertwined. They're so connected to each other. You know, so chicken and egg, right? Who was mad first? You know, was the installer right to be angry over, you know, the improper information on the plumbing assessment form? Of course. Was the salesperson right to be upset over the installer not taking his shoes off and tracking mud all over the floor and having the customer, you know, say they wanted it taken out? And of course, you know, and so what's the solution to that? It's empathy. It's working together. And the way I learned that, there were two lessons that I wanted to kind of talk about today. And you know, we've had calls very specifically about how to get the installers and the salespeople talking to each other and communicating with each other. But there's a second lesson I want to talk about that I learned from Outback Steakhouse, of all places. Some of you may have, I've made mention of this before because, you know, there are a few jobs that I've had that really, you know, you just learn a ton. And it's odd for me to say it, but Outback Steakhouse, when I worked at Outback Steakhouse, it taught me life lessons and professional lessons that I think are worthy of sharing. It's interesting because Outback Steakhouse was the first actual job that I had when I moved to Michigan. So I went to school to become a high school teacher, did my student teaching, realized I don't want to be a teacher. I was married. I had a baby. I decided to come to Michigan. It's where her family was from. And I was trying to make a living doing public speaking and motivational speaking for alternative education groups, troubled kids, stuff like that. There's a whole history behind why I wanted to do all of that. But in addition to that, I needed to have some extra money. And so I got a job waiting tables at Outback Steakhouse. And I had waited tables all the way through college. I mean, I bartended, I had you know, waited tables. I'd done it a lot. I was a pretty good server. I made good money. And, you know, waiting tables is difficult. It's a challenging job. It's essentially straight commission I know there are states that are changing the rules now, but for me, we made half of minimum wage. And you have to go in, you have to work. But I made good tips. I always made good money. I was pretty good at it. You have to be organized. But every restaurant that I ever worked at prior to Outback Steakhouse, every restaurant I ever worked at, the servers and the cooks had a relationship that reminds me very much of the relationship between many salespeople and service and install departments that I see in our industry. It's very similar. It's because salespeople tend to be, they're basically straight commission, but they're also really fast to throw the cooks under the bus. So you look at it, right? Salespeople have to, or the servers have to go out there. They have to work. You know, they're working for tips. And sometimes their customers stiff them. They leave. And sometimes they don't make money because the cook messed up the meal. sometimes it sits there, you know, in the warmer too long. Or, but on the other hand, if you're a cook, that server's constantly coming back saying, will you make this different? Will you do this? The customer changed their mind on this. Will you do this? And a lot of times that food sat in the warmer, up under the warmer in the window for a lot longer because the server was disorganized and didn't know what they were doing, or they were overwhelmed, or, you know, they had too many tables. But the cooks are always the ones that get blamed. I'm sorry, the kitchen didn't put that in. They didn't, you know, they didn't make it. They messed it up. And so it's kind of the same thing. You know, they're two different worlds. You know, the servers make good money. Okay, if they get the tips. But what the cooks don't often see is that there's a couple hours of work that a server has to do, you know, side work they call it, after their shift is done to clean up, where there's no chance, still get paid half a minimum wage. And there's no chance for tips during that time, but that's that hour and a half that you have to do that side work. Cooks get paid, you know, they clock in, they cook, they get paid. Of course, the servers don't see the cooks back there, you know, getting burned and you know, having to work in that heat and everything else, you know, so it's a similar dynamic. So when I got the job at Outback Steakhouse, there were two lessons that I learned. Two big lessons. I mean, it was a pretty good place to work. I actually made more money working at Outback Steakhouse than any restaurant I ever waited tables on. And it was kind of interesting. It really did bring a lot of that into my sales. So the first was with the relationship between the servers and the cooks. When I got the job, as I said, I was an experienced server, but it was over 2 months before I got to wait on my first table. I was hired as a server, but it was over 2 months. For the first week I worked there, I had to wash dishes. I was back there washing dishes. That's what I had to do for that whole week. And then the next week, I was bussing tables, taking the dishes back to the dishwasher. Thought it was kind of interesting the way they did that, too. They had me wash dishes first, and then they had me bus tables. And it's because, I mean, the dishwashers are kind of, in a lot of restaurants, kind of the lowest, right? It's the lowest totem pole. Yet the bussers come back, and they learn what the dishwashers hate about when the bussers bring their food back. So the bussers come back and they bring the food a lot more prepared for the dishwashers. They make the dishwasher's job a lot easier because they understood what the dishwashers hated about what the bussers did. And then after I had to bus tables for a while, I spent over a month in the kitchen cooking right next to the cooks, getting to know them, appreciating them, understanding how things were prepared and why it's not as easy to just say, hey, will you leave this off? Will you make this different than a server often thinks? I'll just leave the ingredient out. Well, that's not how they prep food sometimes. You know, so I was back there. I had to work as a prep cook. I had to work on the line as a fry cook, as a, you know, doing all of that. For over a month, I did all of that. And I got to know the cooks. They weren't just somebody that were putting out orders. I get to know them. We laughed and joked and, you know, you get along with them. And then I had to follow servers around and get to know the systems and stuff like that. But it was over 2 months before I got the job. That is the only place I have ever worked, any restaurant that I ever worked, where the servers and the cooks felt like a cohesive team, where they actually got along. When I became regional manager at Clearwater Systems, one of the very first things that I did was I eliminated separate sales and service meetings. We eliminated separate sales and service meetings. So because I wanted everybody in the same room talking about the same things, getting to know each other. We also made it mandatory that all salespeople, at least once a month, rode with the installer on their job, not just met them at the job, but rode with them, met them at 6 o'clock in the morning, helped them load up the trucks, went out there with them and spent the day with them so that they could understand what was going. We did sales training, you know, like mock demos. It's with the installers so that they understood. We taught them, you know, we had the salespeople practice their demo on the installers, you know, with them so that they could see that and they understood what they were saying and why they were saying it and how. So that was one of the big lessons that I learned. The other one that I wanted to kind of talk about, lessons from the Outback Steakhouse. This is interesting. For those of you that are in sales in particular, it seems a little counterintuitive, I realize, but I made more money. I made more tips at Outback Steakhouse than I did at any restaurant I ever worked at. And at first, when I went in there, one of the policies that they talked about, I didn't like. They said they would only give us a maximum of three tables at a time. Servers were not allowed to have more than three tables at a time. Why do you guys think that was? It's the first question I'm asked. So go ahead. Paul, what do you think?
To take care of the customers.
So you can focus on them.
Yeah. It was unbelievable how well that worked, you guys. So if those of you that have read my book or have heard me talk, I often say it's better to work a little territory a lot than a lot of territory a little. Okay. Every other place that I'd worked, they would just keep loading. You know, you'd have a section and they would load it up. And if the section filled up, you were busy and it was overwhelming. And you had to be really super organized to be able to take care of that customer and make sure that they got everything they needed. For at Outback, they gave us three tables, which gave us the time. Even if you weren't that good of a server and you, you know, it was hard to stay organized, you had enough time to still give superb service. Now, if you were a good server and you did stay organized, then it just made the work way more fun. It was a lot more relaxing. You could be more attentive when necessary. You know, and I made incredible tips, less tables, but way better tips because, I mean, I averaged well over 30% on my tips over there because they because I was just able to give what I would consider superb service to those customers that came in. I mean, it was a huge compliment. Sometimes people would wait an extra 30 minutes to get one of my tables in my section. And I, you know, they'd come after a while, they'd come there to wait because, and I love that so much. And so I took that lesson into sales with me. Salespeople tend to want these big, especially if you work at a company that has protected territories, which I'm a huge fan of. I think that if you're trying to create a team of sales professionals that are going to create their own business, you've got to give them a protected territory. Now, salespeople love to have protected territories because then nobody else can come sell in their territory and they get everything that comes out of their territory, but they're not willing to go out there and create. So if you got a salesperson that is just winning house leads, they want you to give them a protected territory and all they're doing is taking house leads or the leads that you advertise, no, that doesn't work. Protected territories only work if that salesperson is going to go out there and build relationships and work them and develop that territory and create business. Otherwise, why would you lock it up? I mean, shoot, give the lead to the guy who closes the highest closing ratio. Take your cost per sale down. It doesn't make good business sense to give all your house leads to the guy who's closing at 30%. You know, that doesn't make any sense fiscally. But if you have somebody who's going to go out there and develop that territory and create business and earn referrals, yeah, give them a protected territory so they're incentivized to go out there and develop those relationships so that they can nurture those relationships and watch them grow and develop it. But when you start having those conversations with your salespeople or if you're a salesperson who are getting that protected territory, you know, you go, oh man, it's not, my territory's not big enough. I'm not making enough money on it. Then here's the lesson from the Outback Steakhouse. It's better to work a little territory a lot than a lot of territory a little. If you have a tiny territory, you feel like it's too small, okay, then work the heck out of that thing. Make a commitment. Instead of saying, there's not enough people here for me to make a living, guys, I live, the town that I worked in, my sales territory, we had two stoplights and a bar called the Bloated Goat. Okay, they eventually when I sold my house, we had three stoplights and a Super Walmart. They built a Super Walmart there, but this was there was not a lot of new construction. I wasn't going to make. There's no way. I mean, and you guys have heard me talk about this before, the most house leads I ever got in any one year that I was in sales was 23 the entire year. And that year I sold 350 units, 347, but roughly 350 units. And now, when, again, just to define a unit, that's a lot. Often my sales would be, you know, three units. So water softener, reverse osmosis, iron filter, for example, okay, or UV, you know, so primary units. But I made sure I was able to do that because I had this tiny territory. I took the same lesson I learned from Outback Steakhouse, and I nurtured it. I was out there. I spent my days developing those relationships, becoming the expert in the area. In a small town where everybody knows everybody, you got two options. You can either become the guy that everybody knows screws people over, or you can become the guy that everybody calls when there's a problem, when they have a water question, they see something on the news, they call you, they want to know about it. And the referrals just fly in at that point because you're the only guy. You're the only guy that is not a sales guy. You are an expert. And because you are able to spend so much time, they don't have to, oh, what was that guy's name? Here, let me see if I can find his number. They know it. They've got you programmed in their phone because you spend your time giving back to that community and working with them and developing relationships and letting them see that you're not just some sales guy who comes out there just because they want to, you know, they call it a Google search and you happen to work at that company. You know, that's the lesson that I learned from Outback Steakhouse. It's better to work a little territory a lot than a lot of territory a little. I made way more money and had the drive a lot less, and frankly, I think enjoyed my job a lot more than those people that were having to sell twice as much and drive a lot further to get to those house leads to make the same amount of money that I made. I got to spend time with my kids, and I got to work in the schools, and I got to stay in the community, and I got to stay close to home. The reason I could run home for dinner was because my appointments were right around the corner from my house, because I eventually built my house dead smack in the middle of my territory because people were paying for my kids to eat. I wanted to pay my taxes back in the community I lived in, you know, so develop that attitude. Anyway, that's my lessons from the Outback. What do you guys think? What are your thoughts in the last couple minutes? Did you guys feel lectured in this call? There wasn't a lot of discussion. No. This was basically...
If I could jump in quickly just to concur with what you said about the Outback. When I graduated from college, I got a job at Chase Bank in the management training program, and they just didn't put me in as a manager. I had to go to the credit card processing and process people's credit card payments. I had to go to see where checks come in when you deposit checks, where it goes and work there. So I had to spend time over the course of a year in every single department so that I could understand exactly what happens at every aspect of the bank so that I could problem solve when things came in, or I would know where to go or what to do, and I could be, you know, on my way to being an expert. So I fully support that model in business.
Yeah, excellent. Anybody else? Thank you, Michelle. Appreciate that. Any other thoughts? If anybody wants to understand, if you kind of want to know how to develop a territory or, you know, the process. I mean, of course, I have my book, so you're more than welcome to read that. But also, on, you know, let me reach out to me. I've got some stuff that you can do. We can, you know, get you some of the things that you need there to get started on organizing and developing it and stuff like that. Paul, I see you sent me the email about the response, and it's a little long to read. Also, on the call, we don't talk product or company. So here's what I'm going to do with your permission. Is I'm going to take what you sent me here and what you typed into ChatGPT, and just change it. I'm going to take out the name and the brand of equipment it recommended, and I'm going to post it in the description of the call when I upload it, because this is pretty good actually.
Huh? It's pretty
good. It's pretty thorough.
Sure.
So I think that's, so yeah, it's pretty interesting. All right, guys. With that, that is we have 9 o'clock. So thank you, everybody, very much for joining. We will talk to you next week, if not before. Everybody have a great and safe weekend. Talk to you soon.
Have a good day, everybody.